This is the RaidersBlog.com podcast. I am your host, Taylor Messino. On the line with me, as always, is Bleacher Report's lead AFC West writer and owner of RaidersBlog.com, Chris Hansen. Big game for the Raiders this week. They had the weirdly timed Sunday night game with San Diego. And actually, it's normal for East Coasters. Well, not normal. That game wasn't normal for anybody. But, I mean, you know, normally East Coast people have an 8:30 football game, and obviously on the West Coast it starts at 5:30. But I liked having the late game. Did you enjoy it?
You know, I thought it was fun. I mean, I understand that it probably wasn't the best for the NFL as far as ratings are concerned. I think in this case they probably didn't complain because they got Denver and Dallas for the whole country, but pretty much. So the NFL didn't really care so much, but it wasn't really fair to the teams involved as far as, you know, national exposure. But, you know, I thought it was, I think the NFL community really took to it. I thought it was really fun to have that kind of the late game, the later game on a Sunday night. I don't know if we'll ever see it again, but I certainly think if we have another conflict like we had, I think it's an option, and I think it worked out well.
It almost, I mean, if I was ever going to move to the East Coast, this might even factor into my thinking a little bit. Like, I really enjoyed having that late 8:30 game that, like, East Coasters regularly have with Sunday night football. I really enjoyed having that late game. I thought it was great.
Yeah, I mean, you hear of stories. I've been told stories. I mean, I'm not necessarily in this camp because I've lived on the West Coast my whole life. But you hear stories of people that, you know, their dads let them stay up late on Monday nights to watch Monday Night Football because it used to always start at like 9 o'clock Eastern time. And that used to be the norm. And you hear stories about, you know, that being a bonding experience. And I think that's kind of fun. And I think that maybe the late game isn't such a bad idea. Maybe it was a tad later than I'd normally, you know, say go, but I thought it was fun. I mean, I thought, you know, in similar situation, I don't mind that being the solution. I wasn't sure at first, but I think it ended up being a good compensation for all. It was a little bit fun. Obviously, the Raiders got the win, so that makes it extra special.
Yeah, definitely. Do you think having the later game, I mean, do you think that helped them at all or hurt San Diego, or do you not really think that factors into it?
You know, I don't think it factored into it. I mean, people might try to make the case, but I don't know how you could really make any kind of,
definitive
the players.
Argument.
Yeah, the players got a little bit more time if they got more time to rest up, their bodies would have been in better shape, you know, an additional, you know, 7 hours more of rest than they would normally get. If they wanted to study the opposition, they had some more time. I mean, I don't see what could have been, you know, a detriment. It's not like they were playing at 11:30 at night. I mean, it was 8:30. It wasn't, you know, on West Coast time, it wasn't that late. It's not like this was an East Coast team coming in, and that would have been a different factor. But, you know, I don't really think how it could have really impacted them.
Yeah, I agree. Okay, so let's talk about the game. The Raiders won 27-17. It was an interesting game in that Oakland just came out and they kicked San Diego's ass in the first half. It was 17-0 at halftime. The Raiders looked pretty good. And, you know, the second half, I mean, they kind of just, they hit the snooze button a little bit. I mean, you know, you had the Denarius Moore touchdown. They got called back because he ran out of bounds. And, you know, the Raiders, they at one point almost blew that lead. And it looked like at one point they were going to. And it was just, you know, it was a little nerve-wracking in the second half. But they ended up, you know, winning the game by 10. What were your general impressions from the game?
Well, you know, on one hand, I mean, yeah, just like, well, what happened in the second half that made them go to sleep, if you will? You know, I think, obviously, the Chargers made adjustments. But you also have to consider, Rashard Jennings didn't come back, so they didn't really have the running game that I think that they hoped they would be able to have. And when you're talking about nursing a 17-point lead, you kind of want to be able to use that running game to milk the clock, and they weren't really able to do that. So that hurt a little bit. You know, so I think that was a factor, but the bigger thing I think you saw is that the Raiders, they jumped out to an early lead, and then that helped the defense play better. Obviously, they started forcing turnovers because they were playing with a lead, and that's what happens when you play with a lead. And so, overall, I think the Raiders did well to get, you know, the early lead. And then, you know, the second half, in some cases, I mean, you start playing softer coverage in the defense because really what you're trying to do is you'll take a short completion over the middle if it milks the clock because you're up by three scores. I mean, you're going to do that when you're up by three scores. If it was two scores or one score, it's a different animal. But I think Dennis Allen mentioned it in his press conference after the game. You know, it was a couple instances where they let guys get past them, the safeties. One instance, Woodson was the actual guy that let a receiver get behind him. You can't do that when you're nursing a lead. And that's what really got them in trouble, big chunks of yards like that. So it wasn't a perfect game, but I think it was a very good game. I saw a lot of really great things from Pryor, some progressions that I haven't seen from him in a while. I mean, I haven't seen these certain progressions, and he seems to get just a little bit better every week. I haven't seen that big jump that I feel like I expected to see, but I also haven't seen the big, you know, the big setback game that I think I might have expected to see if I saw a big jump. So, in a way, it's probably better. So overall, I think definitely a game the Raiders can build on. But they also have a big test this week. I mean, Kansas City's 5-0, and their defense is playing great, and it's on the road. So, I mean, there's a lot of factors here going into next week that are going to be really challenging.
Yeah, and we're going to get to that in a little bit. But let's talk about Pryor first. Again, another really, really good, productive game from him. And, he's not working with a whole lot back there. And that, he's making plays. And I think that's something that we haven't seen from a quarterback in Oakland in a really long time. I mean, not only is he playing, within the offense and stuff, but I mean, you see him getting outside the pocket when plays break down, getting the ball. I mean, he's making plays. And right now, I mean, if the NFL draft was this week, I mean, I think the Raiders would look elsewhere other than quarterback. I mean, I think through five games, Pryor's been that good. And obviously, he has to play the rest of the season out the same way. But up until this point, he's been incredibly impressive, and I thought that was probably his best game.
Yeah, I think top to bottom, I think that it was his best game. One thing I saw against the Chargers that I hadn't seen much of, and I saw it several times against the Chargers. Oddly enough, I saw it on quite a few incomplete passes, but that's not a bad thing, because what I saw was he's anticipating. He's starting to anticipate when his receivers are going to be coming out of their breaks. He's getting in the air, and the receivers are going to have to adjust. We saw a little bit when he threw that pass under pressure, threw it to Rod Streeter, anticipating that Streeter was going to come towards him, come underneath, and Streeter ended up making a great grab. And it wasn't the best play Pryor made, but you saw there that he's starting to anticipate where the receiver's going to be, starting to trust his receivers to know where they're supposed to be and to beat the coverage and understand the coverage. He's starting to trust his receivers to do that. I saw him do it twice with Denarius Moore on incomplete passes, but still, he's starting to see that. He's starting to see things quicker, and that's what you really want. That's the thing I noticed out of him the most in this game. And yes, he's not really working with the most. I mean, several times there was no one open for Pryor, and the offensive line was really getting, they had really a terrible game in pass protection. Pryor was getting very little time at all. Really, when he was making plays, he was doing it outside the pocket, and he had to, because he wasn't getting much time in the pocket. Raiders really need to clean that up, especially against the Chiefs. If they're going to have a chance against the Chiefs, they can't have all those good rushers the Chiefs have really collapsing the pocket around Pryor, because he needs to be able to get out of that. He needs to at least have one escape route out of the pocket. At times against the Chargers, he did not have that. So the offensive line needs to get better. I can't say there was one guy, maybe Mike Brizell, who I noticed, okay, this guy is consistently blocking well. The other guys, all of them had breakdowns in pass protection. So overall, really encouraging sign from Pryor. And as you mentioned, if the draft is next week, would the Raiders be looking at a quarterback? And the answer to that is, no, they wouldn't have to be. If there was a elite franchise guy there, do you take him? I think you still do at this point in time. Now, we've got a whole season to watch Pryor and see how he continues to develop, and he's definitely coming a long way. But the one thing that I would say is the one thing about Pryor, no matter how far he's come so far, he's still very reliant on his legs. And I know that in the NFL circles, there's a little bit of concern about quarterbacks that are running because they're afraid they're going to get hurt. Pryor's already missed a game with a concussion. That's the fear. And so if the Raiders don't find an elite quarterback or they don't have that opportunity, which I don't think they're going to at this point, then what do? Well, then you bring in a quarterback that's a lot like Pryor in case he gets hurt, a quality backup. Today I kind of recommended that, hey, Michael Vick's last year in Philadelphia, it might be an interesting fit for him to come in as a backup to Pryor next year. It's a high-quality backup. does similar things to Pryor. I think that would be a natural fit. I don't think he's going to find another starting spot next year. Overall, I think that would be an interesting fit for the Raiders and for Michael Vick. I think that's what you kind of are looking at if you don't go in the direction of a quarterback, because you just don't know if that running quarterback is going to get hurt. So there's a lot of factors to play. We have a lot of time left. You know, we've still got 11 games left to play. Basically we're only about a third of the way through. So I think before making definitive statements on Pryor, let's let him continue to develop. And he's 5 games in. It's been 5 good steps in the right direction. But I don't want to go ahead and say, well, any definitive statements. But if the draft's next week, the nice thing is the Raiders have a luxury is where now they're not saying, dang, we really need a quarterback bad. They're in a situation, let's take the best player available. If that happens to be a quarterback, maybe we do it. But by the end of the season, maybe they're not even saying that. So it's going to be sort of a wait-and-see game on this. I really like what I've seen from Pryor, and I think they can build around him.
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, the thing about it is, you know, he's progressing so much in his passing, and you're talking about his reliance on his legs, and I think a little bit of that has to do with the offensive line. But I was, sure, you know, tweeting through the game and stuff, and it was almost hard to not keep tweeting it because really, the offensive line was abysmal, and he was basically scrambling. He was scrambling almost every time he dropped back. And the thing that stands out is he is, every time out, he is the most athletic guy on the field. I mean, his athleticism is unbelievable. I mean, it's not only just his, you know, speed. I mean, it's his getting around people, juking people. I mean, avoiding defenders. I mean, it's just, his athleticism is unbelievable. And I mean, I think he's made so much progress with the throwing. This is why you see a lot of these people thinking that he, you know, very well could, you know, be a really good NFL quarterback, is because on top of the fact that he's made a lot of progress throwing the ball, he is just the most athletic player on the field every time he steps out.
Yeah, I mean, he's a ridiculous. I mean, some of the plays that he made against the Chargers were just ridiculous plays. I mean, there was a time where he faked a handoff and he rolled to his left and there was 2 defenders there. And he's like, well, okay, I can't. He was contained and he had nowhere to go. Well, you would think, he rolled back to the opposite side, outran the entire defense to the corner, and ended up picking up 5 yards. It was basically a 5-yard loss that he turned into a 5-yard gain.
Yep.
That's just truly amazing athleticism. And, you know, if it wasn't for a few instances where I think he slipped on the dirt, and I do think the Chargers did a decent job of containing him, you know, making him use his arm, which he did to beat them. You know, I think they did. You know, I think they did a decent job, but I still think he was inches away in some cases of breaking a long run, and that's what he does for you. Because you know, you might be able to contain him for a few plays, but eventually he's going to be able to use his legs to beat you. And if he can use his arm consistently to beat you, like he did against the Chargers, he's going to be a really, really tough quarterback to defend. You know. Already we see some of those read option looks. We saw the pistol diamond formation a little bit against the Chargers, and the Raiders ran some passing plays out of that formation with some play action. And we saw that the Chargers really had no answer for that. They played, you know, Chargers fans have been tweeting me that they didn't like Pagano's defense against that. But, you know, a lot of different defenses have been tried against that without much success. And I think really it comes down to execution from the players. Chargers didn't execute, Raiders did, and that's why they ended up winning the game. Overall, I think there's a lot to like. You get the offensive line healthy and solidified. Maybe get Pryor a number one receiver next year. A number one receiver would really help Moore. I think Moore is more of a deep threat number two guy. Streeter, that you could use in the slot more consistently. You could go 4 wide even with Bryce Butler or something like that. I think that would really help the Raiders' offense tremendously. Really take that next step. Obviously, we're assuming here that Pryor just continues to develop, but really have to like what you've seen so far. I mean, there's nothing about Pryor that you're saying, wow, what the heck is he doing out there? You're like, wow, how did he all of a sudden turn into this player? And I think that's a testament to Pryor, and it's a testament to the coaching. I think Greg Olsen has done a fantastic job.
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, we talked about that offensive line. There is a little piece of news to pass along that Menelik Watson suffered a calf injury, or another setback in his calf injury, and so they don't. Did they say what the extent or how if they think he's going to be out? You know, a couple more weeks. I mean, they didn't really say. It was just that it flared up and he missed practice again.
Yeah, it flared up and he missed the missed practice. But I think it was interesting because it was reported as a re-injury to his calf, or his calf flamed up. But his injury was a knee, not a calf.
Right.
I'm not so sure it's going to be a big thing. I mean, you hope it's not something where he strained the calf, or, you know, or did something like that. But, you know, hopefully it's something that he can still get back on the field. Honestly, I didn't necessarily expect him to see him this week necessarily anyway. I figured it might take him 2 weeks to practice to really get up to speed. But they certainly could use him really badly. Having Pashos back and Menelik Watson back, that's a good step. Hopefully, you know, later this season you get Veldheer back. You get Watson back. You can shuffle the offensive line around to get the strongest five on the field. And I think that's really going to help Pryor, help the running game. I think it helps everybody. But the Raiders are going to have to figure out how to win games, you know, with lesser talent. And so far, I think with Pryor, they've been able to do that. We saw what happened when it was Flynn, and it just didn't turn out very well.
No, not at all. And, I mean, again, that's just even more of a testament to Pryor. It's just he's been almost like, I mean, I hate using this because, I mean, obviously there's 11 guys, but he's basically been a one-man offense. I mean, even as we've talked about in here a lot, you know, the big plays they've generated of the running game, well, that's, you know, read option stuff. That's Pryor's legs, you know, forcing the defense to, you know, have to account for that, which obviously opens up holes for McFadden. I mean, that's, you know, they're not running the ball great out of conventional sets because, you know, you're not expecting Pryor to run an option out of a conventional set, but out of, you know, the read option. I mean, he's even creating plays for others. I mean, he really has been basically he's almost been the Raiders' entire offense through the four games he's played.
Yeah, I mean, you say that one of the things that I've learned covering the AFC West is a lot of things what they said about Peyton Manning last year and this year and continue. He floats all boats, which means he makes everybody look better. I think that's what the franchise quarterbacks in this league do. They make everybody look better. And I think Pryor is proving that he does that. He makes everybody look better. He makes the offensive line look better. The running backs look better. The wide receivers look better than they are. He's making everybody look better, and that's what franchise quarterbacks do, and that's what I'm so encouraged by what I've seen. You know, the receivers, I don't think, are getting open quick enough for Pryor, especially because of the pressure that he's seeing and he's being forced out of the pocket. But you do need to give him credit for one thing. Especially, I've seen Rod Streeter, Denarius Moore starting to get better at this. Bryce Butler's done it several times as well. What you're starting to see is that they're doing really well at adjusting after Pryor scrambles. They're finding the open pockets. They're adjusting to Pryor. They're coming back to Pryor. You know, they're making plays that, you know, sometimes you're like, don't throw that. And, you know, I still say, well, probably don't want to throw that very often. But the reason it's been possible is because the receivers are coming back. They're moving back to Pryor, and Pryor's not hesitating. He's not throwing that back across the body a split second too late. He's doing it early while the receiver's coming back to him, and the defenders are not having a chance to adjust. And that's why it's still working. It's dangerous, but it's still working because the receivers have been very good about adjusting to Pryor once he moves outside the pocket. And his ability to the improvisation that he has, it's uncanny. I haven't seen, to be honest with you, I don't know if I've ever seen a quarterback quite like Pryor in terms of his ability to make plays in an improv fashion. I mean, undesigned plays. Normally,
I would say Roethlisberger would be a guy that comes to mind when
maybe,
you think of that.
Maybe. You're absolutely right. I mean, I've never seen anything quite like it.
No, it's really remarkable. And, I mean, even, you know, if you look at the statistics, I mean, I have them right in front of me. I mean, this last game, 18 of 23 passing, you know, 221 yards, 9.6 yards, you know, throw. I mean, those are really good numbers for, you know, most quarterbacks, you know. I mean, it's not like he was, you know, 18 for 40 and he just made a lot of plays. I mean, he's even, you know, that shows he's at least being efficient in terms of completing passes down the field. I mean, he really, that last game was, I wouldn't say a perfect game, but it was, you know, by far the best we've seen from Pryor.
Yeah, to be honest with you, Taylor, I mean, I only think I watched all his snaps, both as a runner and a passer, and I would say that there might be three plays where I would say Pryor could have done more. He could have done better. He didn't make the right read, or he didn't make the right throw, or he could have done better. It might have been three plays. That's pretty low.
Very low.
you know, that's very low. I mean, I know that the percentage, I mean, he only passed the ball, what, 23 times?
Yeah.
So the percentage, you know, I've seen Peyton Manning make one mistake in 40 throws, but that's Peyton Manning.
Right.
You know, that's Peyton Manning. He doesn't see that in one in 40 throws. But I've also seen games where Manning makes, you know, he does that three or four times, and he throws 30 passes. And so Pryor is working his way up the ranking of the way good quarterbacks can play. And then he's got that added dimension of his legs that really, I mean, even against the Chargers, I mean, they contained him pretty well. I think he had something 31 yards or something rushing. So, you know, and at any time he could take the ball the distance. I mean, he's an amazing athlete, and that's something that some quarterbacks don't have. So even when you look at him compared to, I think if you look at his stats right now, I think he's maybe above average passer, just barely above average. But when you also factor in his threat with his legs, I think that bumps him up even more into that category just below really the best quarterbacks in this league. Now, that's through five games. I'm not saying that he's there yet, but that's through five games. And if he continues to progress, I mean, like I said, if he continues to progress and he becomes a really good passer, the offensive line solidifies, you're talking about a player that is going to be one of the most dynamic quarterbacks in the league strictly because of his athleticism. I mean, if you look at what made RG3 so good last year? What made Colin Kaepernick so good last year? You know, it was scheme, but it was also these guys that they were passing, they were doing really good as passers, and they could run. What we've seen so far is RG3 can't run as well, and then, you know, the 49ers have backed off Kaepernick's running because they don't want him to get hurt. So, you know, what we've seen so far is that teams that, if they let him run and they can pass, these guys are amazing, but you start ratcheting back that passing ability, it waters down how good they can be and how they can float an offense up. And that's what I think the concern is going forward with Pryor or any running quarterback is, how do you make sure that you can, if you lose him for any specific time, that you can make sure that your offense doesn't take a huge step back? And I think the answer, and it seems odd, is to find a second quarterback that does similar things or that can do similar things, at least for a short period of time. I mean, if you lose your starter for a long period of time, you're screwed anyway. But if you lose him for a couple of games here and there throughout the season, you can live with that. And that would be the best you could hope for with a guy like, you know, a running quarterback. I think you have to consider all these factors.
You
have to consider all those things.
Yeah, and one other thing I would add to that, too, is, I mean, if you look at both the 49ers and the Redskins, I mean, the 49ers is more due to injuries. But, I mean, you know, another thing is these quarterbacks need to be surrounded by playmakers on the outside. As well, it also helps them open up, you know, spread the defense out a little bit, open up, you know, some of those running lanes and the read option and stuff. That's something, and you talked about it, you know, a couple minutes ago, and it's something everybody, I think, probably agrees on, is that the Raiders obviously do need to get a number one receiver and maybe even a bona fide number two receiver. And so, obviously, moving forward, if Pryor's going to be the guy, that's something I think is absolutely essential, given that he's not the classic drop-back passer that he need. You know, you need to be able to loosen up that front seven to give him some space to operate as well.
Yeah, you're absolutely. I think you hit the nail on the head there. I mean, you need the offense needs help. Pryor is raising everybody's level of play, but the offense still needs help. It's hurt on the offensive line. You need some more playmakers. I don't think they've gotten McFadden involved in the passing game as much as they should. I know that they have tried to get Reese involved in there, but I don't think McFadden's been as involved in the passing game as he should. I think his career numbers are down in that instance. So, you know, there's a lot of things that the Raiders still need to improve upon. No one's saying they're a complete product. But when you're talking about Pryor, I think you're finally starting to see, hey, you put some pieces around this guy, and he continues to develop, the Raiders could have something special. And I think that's where the Raiders are headed, and they hope they're headed. And they need to keep Pryor on this path. They need to keep him improving. And this week is huge. This is a huge week for Pryor. The Chiefs have the number one defense. I know they haven't played anybody really yet, but they have the number one defense in football. They have a great pass rush. They've got a good secondary. They match up well against, you know, most teams, whether, you know, I think the worst The best thing you can do is put a third receiver on him, try to beat him that way. But even then, I think they've done a fair job there. You know, this is a big test. It's on the road. The Chiefs fans are going to try to set a noise record at Arrowhead, so it's going to be noisy. They're going to have to practice the silent snap count. And these are all things that Pryor is starting to come along with. And I think somebody mentioned to him, I've been waiting for the big leap. And somebody said, I think the biggest leap for him is no penalties, no, you know, getting team in and out of the huddle and not turning the ball over. And that's true. I think he has done that. That's where a big jump have we seen. This week is a big test. Can he avoid the turnovers? Can he still make plays? And can he get the team in and out of the huddle in an environment that's expected to be very, very noisy?
Yeah, and you know, we talk about how the Chiefs haven't played anybody, but if you look at the Raiders' schedule, it's not exactly like they've had a murderer's row the first five games and the four that Pryor's played. I mean, the Colts have ended up playing some really good football, but I mean, at the start of the year, the Colts struggled with the Raiders and they lost to Miami in week two. I mean, the Colts didn't look super impressive. Then you had, obviously, the Jaguars and the Chargers, who were two. I mean, the Jaguars are historically bad, and the Chargers are probably an average to below average team and a pretty bad defense. Then you had Denver, whose defense, you know, is as great as their offense as I think their defense is. Their defense isn't bad, but it's not great. I wouldn't call it one of the top, you know, five or six defenses in the league. And so, you know, it's not
right now.
Maybe with Von Miller back, but not in Bailey, but not right now. But anyways, you know, with Pryor, I mean, this is a great test for him. And I think this is going to be a measuring stick game. And it's not that if he struggles that, you know, oh, well, he sucks, we're done with him. It's not necessarily that, but it's just, you know, this is going to be by far, I think, the most difficult game he's had up until this point, especially if, you know, a guy like McFadden isn't playing, if he's out again. You know, and, you know, I don't know what Jennings' situation is, but, you know, if there are injuries in the backfield along, you know, then it'll be even more challenging for him. And so it'll be interesting to see how he handles it. And again, they may lose by 40 and he could still play well. It's just, you know, they may not score a lot of points. And so it'll be interesting to watch the game and really see how he really handles himself and how he plays.
Yeah. You know, there's a lot of factors in this game that are going to be interesting to watch. And, you know, with Pryor, I think the obvious thing is, I mean, it's not just on Pryor. And, you know, Kansas City's offense, I would say, has been about as close to average as you could probably expect them to be, which means the Raiders' defense is going to have to step up and play well. If they step up and play well, then they might have a chance to win this game with some big defensive plays. I mean, they got some big defensive plays, special teams plays. They played all three phases well against San Diego. But they need to do that again because I don't think the Chiefs, I'm not so sure they can come from behind and win.
They don't get a lot of big plays on offense.
No, I don't think their offense is built to come from behind and win. I think they're built to win. Maybe they can win close games. I know they can win when they're leading. So it's going to be important for Pryor not to turn the ball over, get some early points on the board, just like they did against the Chargers. And then you talk about the Raiders' defense being able to attack Alex Smith a little bit more, forcing Alex Smith to you know, throw a little bit more, forcing Andy Reid. He's kind of got a history of abandoning the run when he gets behind, and that limits Jamal Charles a little bit, you know, what you're going to get damage out of him. I think overall, this is how the Raiders have to attack that. If they have to think, let's throw everything we have at him early. Let's get after them early on offense. Then, you know, take away the short stuff from Alex Smith. I mean, I've been surprised at how teams haven't really got up in the face of the wide receivers and played press, you know, got really close to the line and forced Alex Smith to go deep. If you get beat deep by Alex Smith, it's not a big deal. I know that defensive coordinators are risk averse. They don't want to get beat deep. But you know what? If you get beat by Alex Smith, you just tip your cap because you figured out a way to make a play. I think you can't expect him to do that consistently. Get up in his face, get up against the line of scrimmage, play press, you know, and have the safeties fly up for run support. I think that's the skill that they and the scheme that the Raiders need to play to beat these Chiefs. Obviously, Pryor, he's going to, regardless of whether he can get the points on the board early, he's got to avoid the turnover. Keep the Raiders in the game. You know, avoid the turnovers. Don't give the Chiefs, you know, extra. They're number one in defense. They're number one in turnover margin. Do not give them turnovers to where they can make plays and put their offense in good situations or score themselves. I mean, you can't do that. On the road, you can't do it on the road, period, but you can't do it against a good defense like this, against a team that, you know what, they're winning games, regardless of what you think about their offense and Alex Smith, they're winning games 5-0. They haven't played any great teams yet. That's coming. This might be the biggest test for the Chiefs yet, for all we know. It's going to be a very interesting game. The Raiders have had some success at Arrowhead. We'll see if that continues to translate, but very interesting game. I think one of the most interesting games in the AFC West this year is this game. I thought the Chargers and Raiders were really interesting. We kind of saw how that played out. I'm really interested to see how this plays out as a second AFC West matchup. It's actually the third of the year, obviously, after Denver played the Raiders. But so I think it's interesting to see how these three teams, below Denver, really play each other. You know, if the Chiefs blow out the Raiders, maybe they're a contender against the Broncos. If the Chiefs and the Raiders slug it out, I think you're looking at an instance where, you know what, the three teams below the Broncos are going to fight back and forth all year, and no one's going to really be in the class of the Broncos this year. My guess is that's how it's going to be when everything's said and done, but this is a big game to kind of determine the direction of how's the second half going to play out in the AFC West. And that's going to, you know, keep in mind that how you finish in the division dictates your schedule the following year. How you play in the division dictates tiebreakers and things for other things like draft picks and things. So overall, you have to look at this as this is important, how the Raiders play, future of the franchise is prior, and how the defense plays. I mean, you got all kinds of free agents there. I mean, overall, this is a big year. But this game seems to be one of those games where, like, this could be the Raiders' step, real big step in the right direction if they can win this game. Or it could be, you know what, the Raiders improved, yes, but not quite ready to take that next step.
And, you know, I don't want to float this out, you know, kind of ridiculously, but you look at the standings, and, you know, that Redskins game really is a shame that Pryor was hurt because they would have won.
Oh, it's a shame.
They're 2-3. You know, Kansas City right now, I guess, would be the first wild card team, but all the other wild card teams are 3-2. I mean, you know, the Raiders, their schedule's not particularly hard, you know, going down the stretch. I mean, they have a few games here and there, but, I mean, for the most part, you know, they get, I believe they have the NFC East, they get the Giants and the Eagles and stuff, and none of those teams are really any good. They win this week somehow. You know, standing there at 3-3, I mean, that's an outside shot at the playoffs, too, which obviously for this season would be an unbelievable victory for the Raiders. I mean, this is thought of as a rebuilding year, and I mean, for you know, to contend like that would be unbelievable, you know, also for Coach Allen, but you know, for Pryor, I mean, you know, I don't want to start this a little early, but I mean, again, they win this week, they're 3-3. I mean, they'd be right in the thick of that second wildcard spot.
I mean, yeah, it's a little premature to think that, but I think that's what, if they beat the Chiefs, then you can start thinking like that a little bit, where you're like, hey, this team is better than we thought. It might be more talented than we thought. You know, they're coached well. They've got a quarterback that's progressing. I mean, that's the kind of way that you can think if they win this week. If they don't win this week, though, you know, or they have a setback in terms of, you know, they really don't do well at all, like they, you know, they maybe have a performance like they had in Denver, then, you know what, then maybe you hold the phone on that a little bit. But, you know, it's certainly something that we don't want to get too ahead of ourselves here, but I think the Raiders have played well enough to where you're like, this is a well-coached team. They might be a few pieces short of where they need to be, but with as much cap and room as they have next year and with a full deck of picks besides the fifth rounder for Flynn, I mean, you look at this team, if they can get anywhere near, you know, 6, 7, 8 wins even, that's a huge victory for them. And with, you know, a possibility to really build on that next year. You know, I think that this is where the Raiders are at. This is the best, to be honest with you, I think this is the best case scenario for the Raiders. If you were looking at it right now, and you, before the season, you said, you know, the Raiders are 2-3 after 5, you'd be like, oh, that's about as best as you could have expected. I mean, that's what you're looking at. And then you look at other things. I mean, who would have said that the Raiders would be 2-3 with Pryor looking like a good quarterback, and with Hayden still looking a little bit shaky as a cornerback.
And with Veldier hurt, and with McFadden banged up.
Yeah, and with C.O. Moore not really making a huge impact, and with Menelik Watson out. I mean, when you look at if you were to put all those factors in, McFadden misses a game, Flynn is released, and Veldier's injury and Watson's injury and C.O. Moore's not much of an impact, and Hayden is struggling a little bit, although he did have the pick last week, but he got beat on the route, and then he made up for it. But, you know, if you were to put all those factors out there, obviously you would look at it and say, I don't know how the Raiders could be 2-3 after five games, and they are. It's really the best-case scenario that you could have imagined. Hayden's going to work on his technique. He's only going to get better, in my opinion. C.O. Moore, I'm still a little curious how he's going to end up working out for the Raiders. I haven't really loved what I've seen from him as far as, you know, playmaking ability, but I do believe that he'll get better over time. Most young players do get better in a good coaching environment. Brandon Ross, I think, has played really good for Tyvon Branch. We didn't even mention Tyvon Branch is out.
Right.
There's so many things, and you're like, if you were to say all those things, you would have been like, there's no way that the Raiders are 2-3.
Probably 0-5, you'd think 0-5, probably.
Yeah. You think 1-4 with a win over the Jags, maybe. That's what you'd be thinking with all that. That's just the way it goes. So.
No, it's good. And, one thing we haven't talked about, and something you just mentioned like 3 or 4 times, well-coached Dennis Allen doing a pretty good job. I mean, I think Greg Olsen also deserves a lot of credit. But the first drive the Raiders had, the first two drives, they seemed like they were scripted, weren't they?
Oh, yeah, they were.
Definitely. Yeah. But that's good coaching. I mean, Greg Olsen called some really good drives there. I mean, we talked about how it was a good thing to acknowledge that Knapp was a disaster, and, I mean, it would have been catastrophic to not acknowledge that. But, I mean, Greg Olsen's done a good job, and you have to give Dennis Allen some credit for finding him. And, the defense has its issues, but I feel like, I trust whatever Tarver, kind of wants to throw out there. I mean, I think Allen and his staff have done a really good job this season so far. And, for a coach on the hot seat like Allen, I mean, right now, if the season ended today, I'd be leaning towards keeping him next year. I mean, I think through five games, he's done a good enough job to keep his job.
Well, I remember Mark Davis said he wanted to see improvement, and I think they have seen improvement.
Yep.
I think that they have seen improvement from the team. Mark Davis has certainly probably seen it. We've seen it. You look at the defense, I mean, they're limited. They're trying to create pass rush. They're blitzing a lot more than they were, especially defensive backs. They're not always getting there, which is a concern, but they're doing as much as they possibly can to help the secondary to try to get pressure. They're obviously taking, they feel like they've got talent in the secondary, and that's where they can help their defensive line get pressure. They're doing as much as they can, and I think that's all you can hope for is, are they scheming properly? Are they doing as much as they can? Obviously, sometimes things, you can do things and they work. And if they work, you're a genius. And if they don't, you're a goat. Nick Roach, I tweeted about this last night. Nick Roach dropped way back into coverage, 30 yards down the field, covering Eddie Royal, of all guys, this little speed receiver. And you know what? Guess what happened? Phillip Rivers, that was the first interception. I think it worked, but you do that and Eddie Royal gets bust free of the linebacker and catches it in front of the safety or whatever, then that looks like a bad play. But it worked, and that's what matters. And I think the biggest part of that is the players, do they buy in? Are they executing? Are they hustling? You see this veteran group, They're smart. I still think that Tracy Porter's a weakness. A weakness in the secondary. I think Jenkins has been solid, if not spectacular, but I think he's been solid. But you look at Brandon Ross. I think Woodson has been solid, and Brandon Ross, I think, has been very good with what he's been able to do. Kevin Burnett, I think, has really given the Raiders a lot of flexibility. Nick Roach, I think, has been pretty solid as well. And you look at all, you know, maybe no one blows you away yet. They do need a dynamic defender at some point, a pass rusher or somebody in that.
They need two or three, probably.
Yeah, probably. But you'd be happy with one dynamic pass rusher. I mean, if say the Raiders, I mean, I know right now they probably are playing too good for this, but if they had a chance to get Clowney next year, I think he'd be perfect.
I do too.
If you put Clowney with Houston, I mean, Houston's pretty good. But if they're worried about Clowney, I mean, wow. It could be a really, really good front then.
And this is what we expected coming into the year, is that they'd have a lot of solid players on defense that weren't going to be spectacular and were going to make a ton of plays and maybe not turn out, get as many turnovers as you want. But they were going to have some guys who were going to play solid, and they needed, you know, that one pass rusher and maybe that one shutdown corner and, you know, if we're getting greedy, maybe even a linebacker that can go sideline to sideline. But, you know, this is what we expected out of the defense. And I think, you know, it's good that we haven't been disappointed by that.
Yeah, and that means that, you know, the players are performing as expected. The scheme is working. The players like the scheme. And, you know, overall, you have to point to the coaching and say, you know what, this is an overly talented defense, but they're playing well enough. They're playing well enough right now. They're playing solid football. I mean, there's no shame in getting blown up by Peyton Manning. You know, there's not really much shame in Andrew Luck schooling you. And they even got a, you know, that no non-call on the hold on the final drive with Andrew Luck to let him get a passing touchdown there late. Overall, coaching, I think he's been good. I mean, the special teams looks better as well. The defense looks like it's more disciplined. They're buying in. Offense looks way more creative. And the play calling vastly improved over Greg Knapp's team.
I mean, you could have your daughter call plays, and it would be more creative than Greg Knapp.
I mean, yeah, probably right. I mean, just overall, I think overall, you look at this and you're like, hey, this team, well coached, better than expected. You know, they got two wins against, you know, the Jags. I mean, that's not really a put
that should be a half win.
Cap win.
They should be 1.5-3.
Right. I mean, and then the Chargers, obviously, that was at home, and the Chargers didn't play well, and they obviously had some major defensive issues to work on it. You know, you could pick holes in it if you wanted to, but I think when you look at the whole body of work, it's overall, I think you have to be, if you're a Raiders fan, you have to be happy where this team is right now. Obviously, you'd love for them to take a step forward, another step forward, and maybe look like a contender for the playoffs, just because it's more interesting to follow the team when they're contending. And so, you know, I kind of hope that does come to fruition, because I think the Raiders being relevant makes the NFL better. I mean,
yeah,
we hear that, but I really do believe that.
I believe it too. Okay, so the line on this game right now is the Chiefs are 10-point favorites at home against the Raiders. How do you eventually see the game playing out?
Well, I think I predicted this game to be 24-17 in favor of the Chiefs when I picked the games. But I did mention that one of the things that has made the Chiefs so good defensively is that they're very aggressive. They're very aggressive rushing the passer. They're very aggressive on defense with blitzing and everything like that. And they haven't played a team yet that I feel like has made them pay for that aggressiveness. They haven't played a running game that, you know, has made them pay for overloading a side. They haven't played a quarterback that, you know what, if you rush up the field too much, he's going to take that gap and make you pay for it.
And all these things are surprising given that they played the Eagles a couple weeks ago, but yeah.
Yes, I know, and I realize that, but I really don't think they've played a team that has exploited that aggressiveness.
No, I agree with you. I was just saying. It was weird.
Yeah,
given what you were saying, it's like, huh, I wonder which team has all these kind of things. Oh, Philadelphia has a running quarterback and a really good running game, and they only scored, right. I think it was, what, 16 points? So, yeah, you're right.
Right. Yeah, I mean, they did play well against the Eagles, and that's a game you could go back to and look at for some tips and clues on how they might play the Raiders. But really what they did was they just rushed the heck out of Vic, and they knocked him around, and then he played like garbage. I mean, that's kind of Vic's thing. If you can catch him on a night where he's playing like garbage, then, you know what, the whole team's going to look bad. And I think McCoy still looked good against them.
Yeah.
But it just Vic looked terrible. So, you know, he didn't do much in the running game, he couldn't complete any passes. They were there for him, he just didn't make them. The plays were there for him to make, he just didn't make them. And so those lanes are going to be there for Pryor to take off and run. He needs to make sure that he's the few little critiques, the small critiques I had about him last week, a couple times, and we've seen this a little bit, a couple times he has that opportunity to run, and he hesitates because he thinks he can throw it. And a few times that hurt him because he could have picked up positive yardage and ended up having to throw it away or running or getting sacked or not gaining many yards from it. So I think that's one area if he gets that gap against the Chiefs, you know, you got to tell him to go. Go and take the yards that are there. Use your legs in this game because they're going to give you the opportunity.
And the worst thing he can do this week is hesitate and think, because this is actually a good defense as opposed to some of the defenses he's played recently. And so you're right. You're absolutely right. If he sees a gap, he has to go. If he sees an open guy, he's just got to throw the ball. I mean, the worst thing he can do is hesitate and, you know, take sacks and that kind of stuff.
Yeah, and I think that's really where Pryor's going to have to win this game. I mean, if they're going to decide to blitz Pryor, he's got the ability to escape, but then he's got to be able to find, and if he's got a blitz, there's a guy open.
Right.
We know that. I mean, that's just how it works. And he's got the ability to escape. He needs to escape and find the guy. But he needs to do it quickly. He can't hesitate. He can't wait. You know, that's what it's all about. You know, that's what it's all about for Pryor and winning this game. That's what he needs to do. And I know they're going to have a plan. I know they're going to have a good plan going in, because I've seen Olsen's plans. I think his game plans have been good. You know, I think his scripted play, you look what he scripted, it's good. I think, you know, obviously, as teams have adjusted a little bit against Pryor, that's hurt him a little bit, but I think that's the key to this game, and it's a really big game, as it said. It's just a really big game for, I think, kind of a preview for what this division, how this division's going to shake out, how well the Raiders can be this year, all of that. I think this is the game that is going to tell us a lot about this division early. You know, if the Raiders can play to the Chiefs level, I think that tells us a lot about this division and a lot about the Chiefs, especially their early schedule. You know, I think that's it. I mean, I think we've covered all the bases. I mean, the coaching's been good. Pryor's really coming on. Really, I did not expect to be talking this positively at this point in the year. And I'm hoping it continues, because it's been fun. I mean, Pryor is fun to watch. I mean,
that Sunday night game, I mean, I don't know about you, but, like, I love seeing night games at the Coliseum. It just feels like the right kind of vibe, you know, and it's not to say that day games are crappy, but, I mean, just with everybody wearing black, and, I mean, I love watching night games at the Coliseum. I think the best Raider game I ever went to, it was a couple years ago. I think Cable was still the coach. It was when they were playing the Chiefs. And the Chiefs were in first place that year. They won all those games. And the Raiders won that game in overtime, where Campbell hit Jacoby Ford on the deep post.
I was at that game too, yeah.
Yeah, that was a great atmosphere. And I mean, it was overcast that day, and it just felt right. I don't know why. It's just a weird little thing. But I'd much rather see Raiders play either night games or overcast games in the Coliseum rather than the sun. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, the Raiders have certainly in the last decade or so thrown up some stinkers on their primetime games. But also, some of the most memorable games that I can remember all happened in the primetime, in the night games. I mean, you know, those games. I mean, that's really where the Raiders are. And I agree. I think it just feels right for the Raiders to play at night. You know, the black and pitch black of the night. And I don't know, there's a symbolism there that's awesome. You know, I like this night thing. And, you know, hopefully the Raiders, you know, if with Pryor, you know, going into the next year, if they can continue to surprise this year, Pryor is so fun to watch. I would not be surprised if the Raiders get significantly more primetime looks next year.
Yeah, no, I agree. And, you know, actually one thing we should maybe touch on before we get out of here was the announcement that next year they're going to play a game in London.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
What do you think?
It is interesting.
Yeah, you know.
I have some strong opinions about it only in the, you know, about who they decided to make the road team. You know, you lose a home game and you don't like to see that. But I think in the next few years, we're going to see probably every team losing a home game.
Right.
Or every other
And
year
one thing I
like
thought
that.
About was with the baseball playoffs going on. I mean, there's a strong chance. I mean, if you know, the A's might be back in it next year. Maybe it's, you know, week five that they're, you know, getting that game in London. You know, that's when they schedule the game. I mean, maybe sometime that might, you know, possibly be at the same time as one of the baseball playoff games, and then that way we may have to deal with this, you know, what we just had to do this weekend. So I was thinking maybe that had something to do with it as well. They put it in, you know, week four, five, or six.
Yeah, they could even put it in, like, week three or four as well. And that would mean the Raiders might be able to limit it to one game on the dirt or no games on the dirt, depending on how they do the schedule. You know, it'll be interesting to see what they do, but... the thing that I feel strongly about with this whole London thing is I don't think they should move the Battle of the Bay out of the Bay. A lot of people, well, the violence of the last time that you played and they ended up ended the preseason game or whatever. People don't understand. It wasn't just, oh, they're going to play, there's going to be violence. It went on for years. What it was at the time, the 49ers had a very poor security at Candlestick Park. The way that Candlestick Park is situated makes it hard enough to police. And what you had was a 49ers fan actually shooting a Raiders fan.
I've always said that the 49ers have this like wine and cheese kind of reputation. I've said for a while that because I've been to a lot of games at both stadiums, I would much prefer a Raider crowd to a Niner crowd. I mean, the Niner crowd isn't as, you know, clean cut as everybody kind of imagines it to be just because it's San Francisco as opposed to Oakland. I mean, the Niners do not have great crowds.
What we're talking about here is a regular season crowd and a postseason crowd. That's the difference between the crowds that were at Candlestick and Oakland. But you're also talking about Oakland, which has a very good security protocol. That's something that they developed with the NFL, actually, a long time ago. And, you know, the fans didn't love it at first, but I think they've embraced it. And overall, I think it's a good security protocol. And the Raiders have been a model franchise for the lack of violence at Raider games. And I think the Raider fans, in some extent, I think they do self-police. I think none of the Raider fans really want to see violence. I mean, you're gonna get some verbal abuse, but you're not gonna see any real violence against people. I think none of the fans are gonna stand for that that kind of behavior in Oakland and you know, regular season crowd. From my experience, you're not gonna see that. So overall, I think that it would be wrong to move that series out of the Bay. 49ers also went. They're going this year. They went this year to London. Can't remember off the top of my head.
And they've been before too.
Yeah, and they've also been before. I can't see them moving that game. I also don't think it's fair. You know, my strong opinions about it aren't about losing the home game, but I don't think it's fair for the Raiders to lose a home game and then play a team from the East Coast that's got a shorter jet lag than they do. I don't think that's fair either. I think they really need to probably the teams that would have a shorter or the same jet lag would be the Seahawks. I think that would be an interesting one. Or you bring the Seahawks there. I think that would be, you know, get Russell Wilson over there. I think that he's a new face of the NFL that the NFL won't really want to push. There's also the Cardinals that they could do. And then I think those two are the best. And then there's obviously also the Rams, but I think the Rams being in Central Time.
Yep, I agree. You know, it'll be interesting to see what happens. So that is all we have for you guys today. Be sure to follow both of us on Twitter. It'll be up on RaidersBlog.com. Any plugs, Chris?
I don't have any this week, obviously. I just finished watching the tape of Pryor. And you know, I'm going to I'm going to see if I can maybe write a piece about his breakdown, but I don't really have anything specific to plug at this point.
All right. Well, that is all for us, and we will talk to you guys next week.